Thanks, Robin. My name is Lee. I'm an alcoholic. And good to be here. Thanks to Mark for the invitation. And I agree with my wife, man. The welcome that you guys gave us was amazing. You guys, it means the world to those of us. When you're coming from out of town, and so, there have been times when I have been the speaker. I mean, I'm the guy in the coat and the tie, and no one said hello. You know, so to get the kind of welcome you guys gave us, it really means the world. I guarantee, even the speakers who didn't say anything, it does. It really does. And I've been here before. I was talking to Joe and, of course, Mark. Mark and I have been friends 30 years? I don't know, a long time. The A-Frame Church, you guys remember the A-Frame? Well, actually, okay, you do remember the A-Frame. I was there right when I came and spoke right when you guys moved into the A-Frame. So it was like 20 years ago. Where's Joe? Right? Yeah, 20 years ago. And the reason I remember it is because, like, the week I got there, you'd been there 2 weeks or something, and some musical equipment had been stolen right after AA started coming to the church, right? And I thought, ooh. Well, you know what? I opened and started a new meeting about 10 years ago at my church, and right after we started our AA meeting, guess what got stolen? A bunch of musical equipment. I'm like, damn, those people from Palmdale, I'll tell you. And then Crazy Otto, right? The restaurant was Crazy Otto, so I've been here with the hotel right next to that. Been up here for that, and love the energy. Of course, with Mark and people like Mark and whoever else, the kind of enthusiasm that we have, and Larry, his sponsor. I got more time than Mark, though. I want to make that clear. My sobriety date, My sobriety date is December 10th, 1987. My home group is the Ghost Any Length group, same as my wife, but I'm a men's stag. Men's stag meeting, and my sponsor is a guy named Bob D. And I said to Mark and also to my wife, you know, this talking thing is fun, right? It's cool. It's good when you're here. It's a drag traveling, man. It's like, if they could beam me there like in Star Trek, some of these guys don't even know what Star Trek is anymore, right? But they used to do this Energizer thing where you could just take your body from one spot to another spot, and that would be kind of cool, but the traveling, so like I'm looking on my calendar as Lancaster is getting closer and closer and closer, and like I could still call and cancel. I'm like, no. And then we get here, and it's like, I know why, guys. It's so fun. You guys are so cool, right? So what I was saying, though, is I don't want to, you know, there's my story. My story doesn't change, right? My story is my story. It's what I got. But, you know, we go on certain threads. We talk about this. We talk about that. And sometimes I've tried to change it up a little bit, and I get further down in my talk, and I have a spot where I'm going to refer back to something I said earlier, but I didn't say it earlier, so I can't say it, you know, if I try to change things up too much. But regardless of that, I am going to, you know, going to try to change things up a little bit, or just be my, I just want to talk, right? I'm just going to talk, see what happens, see what comes out tonight. I'm asking, the times that really goes best for me on this is when it's not recorded, so it's fine that it's recorded, but when it's not recorded, I just let go. It's like me, it's cool, you know? So a little bit, I tell you what, start with the Ghost City Link group that I was talking about. That Ghost City Link group, I had a sponsor before Bob, it was a guy named Keith Carpenter, right? Some of you guys might remember Keith, he was Pacific Group as well. And Keith was my sponsor for a long while, and a long distance sponsorship thing. And then we ended up at a meeting somewhere together, and I shared, or whatever, I don't have any idea what I shared, but I dropped a couple F-bombs. And after the meeting, he pulled me aside and said, hey, we don't talk like that anymore. Or we don't talk like that. I go, yeah, everybody does. Haven't you been to any meetings? Everybody talks like that. And he goes, no, we don't talk like that anymore. And I started changing, and I started changing, and I started changing, listening to my sponsor. I'm a CPA. I'm a certified public accountant because of Keith Carpenter. Keith, I'm an accountant. I'm a finance and accounting major. I passed the CPA exam, but I didn't have enough accounting units to become a CPA. And Keith said, no. You go back to school and get your units for four or five units is all it was. So I did what my sponsor said, and I became a CPA. Now I've been in my own business for 20 years, you know, because following my sponsor's guidance, right? So Keith got on that and got me changing on that. And then I started talking about it, a little bit of meetings, and I became, I don't know, not the pariah, but, you know, there was, people were uncomfortable sometimes. When I would say, you have every right to share, however, and you do too. I don't know how you talk out here in Lancaster, but you have every right to use whatever language you want to. Absolutely. I respect that. And I have a right to say I don't like it. I have a right to say it offends me. I have a right to say, you know, I went to a meeting 2-3 years ago downtown. I hadn't been there for a while. And the meeting starts at 5:30, goes to 6:15, and then they open it up for burning desires, right? And I said, okay, God, if you want me to share, you know. And I didn't get called on it. And I got called on like at 5:13. And I said, hey, you know, I haven't been to this meeting in a long time. And now I remember why. It's because of the language. It's like, holy smokes, you know, for all you newcomers, I want you to know that there are meetings where they don't talk like this. There are meetings where they don't. After the meeting, five people came up to me. Five, not four, five, and said, thank you. Thank you for saying something about the language. One lady said, you mean there's meetings where they don't talk like this? That's how her whole experience of Alcoholics Anonymous had been that. So my sponsor, so Keith and I parted ways. Bob Darrell became my sponsor, and I was talking about this language thing because it was my pet peeve for a while, overly zealous. But it is what it is. And Bob came to town, went with me to one of the meetings downtown. He said, hey, Lee, that meeting you're thinking of starting? I go, yeah. He goes, start it. And so me and one sponsee, me and one guy, that was it. Me and one guy started a meeting, and the only thing in the thing was no cussing. Let's just have a meeting. We could do it. Like, now, if you go to Starbucks and say, give me an effing latte, I got it. You know, but you talk like that. But, you know, we don't do that. Out there in the world, we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get it, the newcomer. That's the argument. Well, I got to talk like that because the newcomer. I was at a meeting downtown 3 months ago. The only people that cussed was a guy with 50 years, a guy with 28 years, and a woman with 18 years. That was it. Nobody else in the room cussed. Nobody. I don't know. So, but the reason I'm bringing this story is not to make you feel uncomfortable. Sorry if I did. I know. I get it. And then I become, that's what I said. It's like, I don't know. Here I go, though. But the meeting, too, me and one sponsee, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And now it's eight meetings, you know, every day of the week, two on some days of the week, plus the big speaker meeting. We've got a big speaker meeting where we bring in out-of-the-area speakers. We are such a successful group that we're bringing people from out of the state three times a year. And we're having a group steering committee next Thursday where we're going to talk about bringing people from out of state four times a year because we can afford it. Right? Because there's enough seven tradition because the attraction is there. Right? People just, they don't say it. None of us say it. None of us have the cojones to say it. But I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the language. So anyways, that's how that group got started. Now we have a men's stag. We have a bunch of them, but it started, the Thursday meeting is now a men's stag. That's my home group. But when COVID started, and we got the March 13th of 2020, whatever it is. One of the guys I sponsored called me up, and he goes, the day we had to start wearing masks. And he said, hey, can we have a meeting with no masks? And he owns a factory. And I go, yeah, sure. So he started a meeting at his factory that you didn't have to. We measured 6 feet between chairs, and we had hand-washing stations, but we didn't have to wear masks. And anyways, like I said, the meeting, so we had the men's stag on Wednesday, and then my wife started the women's meeting on Wednesday at home. And it's just kind of grown, you know, all of that coming from Keith Carpenter telling me we don't talk that way anymore, you know, and me listening to my sponsor. December 10, 1987, I woke up, I went to the front room, I pulled down a fifth of whiskey that I had opened the night before, and there was like a finger's width left in the bottom of it. And I looked at the woman I was married to at that time, and I said, how much of this did you drink? Yeah. And she said, none of it. None of it. And I said, man, I did it again. I did it. I had not intended to drink a fifth of whiskey all by myself again. I had taken my last final at Cal Poly. I came home. I was just going to get buzzed, man. Just woohoo, celebrate. No more out of school for the quarter. Not. So I made a phone call, found out about this AA thing. And at noon that day, I was out of the Pioneer Group in San Luis Obispo, big book study. Couldn't tell you what was read. Don't know who was there except for one guy. And the one guy I know was there was Jack L. And the reason I know Jack was there, because after the meeting he came up to me and he welcomed me. He said, welcome to Alcoholics, like you guys did when we got here tonight. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. He had 13, 14 years at the time, and he talked to me. He spent time with me. And he had a book like this, hardbound big book, about third edition, so a different cover, but a different, you know, sheet. But and he had the book, and he tried to give it to me. He said, here, take this, and la la. And I go, oh, no. He goes, no, this is our program. This is what we read. And you know why I wouldn't take it at first? I was going to Cal Poly. I was going to college, right? I was paying 60, 70 bucks for books like this, right? And at school, you could sell it back at the end of the quarter. I didn't think AA would buy it back. And But he told me the deal, and I did take that book from him. And any of the newcomers here, Jessica and Shonda, I think it was, if you need a big book, I got five in my trunk, in my truck, that I carry around to give away, like Jack gave to me 37 years ago. So if you need a book, we'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. And in our group, one of the, we say, hey, we sell big books at cost. If you need one and cannot currently afford it, we'll give you one for free, right? Because that's what we do. And Jack must have said something about sponsorship, because I asked him, well, will you be my sponsor? And he said, sure. So at the end of my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a big book and I had a sponsor. How many of you can say that? Yeah, every now and then a hand will go up. Unfortunately, I didn't read that book or call that sponsor for 5.5 years, right? 5.5 years, I was what I refer to as stark raving sober. Stark raving sober. I came here to not drink, and I was not drinking just fine. Thank you very much. You know, if I got called on in a meeting, I might share something like, if you don't drink and you don't use, no matter how you do it, you're not wrong. And then you know what would happen? Is that they wouldn't call on me again. That's what would happen. And I would punish that meeting and quit going to it. If they're not going to call on me, I ain't going. Because don't you know, I know everything there is to know. I'm the actor trying to control the whole show, even though I didn't get the page 62, 3, and 4 yet. I'm that guy. And within a relatively short period of time, I was punishing a whole lot of meetings and not going to them, right? Stark raving sober. And at 5.5 years of that, the woman I was married to at that time, she actually, it's not funny, it kind of comes across humorous sometimes, but she read my journal, right? For boys, it's a journal. For girls, it's a diary. For boys, it's a journal. I want to make that clear. It's a journal. But she read my journal, which was a very huge, you know, violation. I mean, when she did it the second time, I haven't written since. Over 20 years, 30 years, I haven't written because it's too scary, because she read it. But the first one, when she read it, she got scared. There was some, you know, I was stark raving sober. And within a couple days, I was checked into the psych ward at French Hospital in San Luis Obispo. And the thing about it is, I met with the doc, and they said, you know, he got out his prescription pad, and it would have been perfectly okay, absolutely 100%, within the realm of Alcoholics Anonymous, 100% okay to take anything he gave me on a prescription in accordance with the prescription. But I told him, you know what, doc, thanks, but I need to do this AA thing. And I had brought a big book with me, and I had brought a 12 and 12 with me, and it was right across the train tracks, the hospital where I was, right across the train tracks from the Pioneer Group where I got sober. Now, normally, when you go into a psych ward, you don't leave the psych ward until they let you leave the psych ward and you're discharged, right? And I know I got some fellow sisters and brothers in here that have been there with me in the psych ward. Don't raise your hands. I know. We're all here. But But in this case, they let me go. They let me go every 7 a.m. They let me go noon. They let me go to the 5:30 meeting. They let me go to the AA meeting, cross the train tracks, and then come back. And I used to, my name was Michael Lee Carroll. Michael Lee Carroll. And I was Lee when I was from birth to about 8 years old. And then we moved to Atlanta, Georgia. My brother, this is a good one. We have different dads. My brother's dad is black. And back in the 60s, that wasn't cool. Nowadays, no problem, right? But back in the 60s, it wasn't cool. So now let's move to Atlanta. Oh, that was smart. Come on, Mom. So I was fighting all the time, right? I was getting, you know, so we moved to Atlanta, and I changed my name to Mike, right? But I went from Lee to Mike. And then while I was in that psych ward, it was March 13th at 2 a.m. It's in my 12 and 12. But March 13th at 2 a.m., I decided to change the title by which I am called from Mike back to Lee. And I've been Lee ever since, because Mike's the guy that did all that stuff, right? Mike's that guy. And so I did an inventory while I'm in that psych ward, and I changed my name, the title by which I'm called, right, from Mike to Lee, and I could leave it all behind, to a degree. Not really, because I remember I had a sponsor, but I wasn't asking him for any help. I already told you I'm an accountant by trade. I know all about inventories. I don't need a plumber to teach me how to do an inventory. I'm an accountant. So I just did, basically what I did is what's on page 65. I did a grudge list. That's what I did. My first inventory is a grudge list. I'm resentful at the cause and affects mine. That's what I did in the psych ward. I didn't turn the page where it says, setting aside the wrongs that I've done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes, right? Where I am selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, afraid. I didn't do that. I just did the grudge list. But it's a very effective inventory, even though it's terrible and laughable for a couple reasons. One, I still have it. I didn't do anything on there that I did, so I didn't need to burn it, shred it, get rid of it. And two, in order to do a second inventory, you have to have done a first inventory. You can't jump to your second. Even, you know, to do a third inventory, you have to have done two. To take continuous inventory, and that was my first, even if it's that terrible. I share, not so much lately, but I'm 37 years sober. And when I went through my first divorce, especially, that was 2012, I found the magic of the inventory work, right? And I got more on it and more on it. And now I've gotten to the point where I used to share, and I still, it's somewhat too. I've done more inventories in the last 10 years than the first 27 combined, right? I found the magic elixir, and for me, it is doing the inventory work, figuring out my mistake. What did I do wrong so I don't behave that way again? The Felina's sponsor says it well. She says that the newcomer Lee, would not even recognize the man standing before you today. Wouldn't even believe that I have become who I have become because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the work and getting involved. So, and service, like you guys, right? Lots of service. I got out of that psych ward, and I got Fast Eddie became my sponsor, and I started getting involved in service, not necessarily because I wanted to. It was God's will. I was going to the stag meeting on Tuesday night in Rio Grande, the men's stag. And I went to the meeting one night, and this guy, Bubba, really was his name, Bubba was the secretary, and he said, hey guys, I have decided that I'm not an alcoholic, I'm going to drink, and I need to give up this meeting. Okay, now that's really unusual in and of itself. I doubt anybody else has seen that happen. I don't think it's never happened. I'm sure it has, but it's not all that often that that happens. And he left. And then this guy, Kurt, said, I nominate Lee. And Lee, second railroad, boom, I'm the new secretary. And I got his commitment. And now it's my meeting now. And I took some pride in the meeting. Anybody that has commitments knows what I'm talking about. And someone else nominated me to be the Grapevine rep for the district. I didn't even know what the Grapevine was, right? Grapevine's a little letter. It used to be meeting in print that, you know, you'd carry around or have with you. But what it allowed me to do was stand up at every meeting I went to and say, do an announcement, get you to look at me. I'm an alcoholic, and here's the Grapevine, and talk about the Grapevine. Wrong motive, but it got me involved in service. And when I got involved in service, my whole life changed. Things changed. Out of that psych ward, I've done some inventory. I've got a sponsor that I'm talking to. Get involved in service. And things really turned. But a little bit, Cliff, I forgot to mention, I had a sponsor, Cliff Roach, for a while. Some of you guys might remember Cliff. Cliff was in between Keith and Bob. And I like talking about what it's like now. I like talking about the magic and the way things are going and you know, what it's like. Everybody drank. We all drank. Everybody knows. Everybody's got their horror stories. And Cliff said, no, I also didn't always wear a coat. And Cliff said, no, you always wear a coat. I go, in Lancaster? He said, yeah, in Lancaster you wear a coat. What it was like, briefly. You know, I was born in the 60s, welfare, single mom on welfare. I remember food stamps back when they were actual, like, Monopoly money. It was like Monopoly money. And they knew, now I think it's a card, I don't know. But back in my day, it was Monopoly money. And everybody in the whole place knew you were on food stamps, knew. And the shame for me on that, and my mom, and I remember peace marches in Balboa Park in San Diego and all that stuff. You know, my mom is very liberal, still is to this day. You know, I joke about it, and there's nothing, no tone in my voice at all. That's just a statement of fact. My mom is so far left, she's a danger to oncoming traffic, man. I mean, she's over there, right? And I didn't have a dad in my life. I got the big brothers. I went to college because I had a big brother of America. You know, that guy, Jim Richwine was his name, and he took care of me. He showed me what a man is supposed to be to a degree. But my idea of a man was those guys on the big screen, John Wayne and Clint Eastwood, man. That's who I want to be like, those guys. Those guys are real men, you know. And, you know, Clint Eastwood and the Outlaw of Josie Wales, man. I mean, that's my kind of guy. Nowadays, no one even knows that. Well, some do, but it's not. It's in color, you guys. It's not that old. But, you know, the end of, and the Jelly Wells, 1 hour and 28 minutes in the movie. You know, you remember Rocky Horror Picture Show? You ever been to Rocky Horror Picture Show at the movie theater? If you go to Rocky Horror Picture Show at the movie theater, so many people are saying it along with the audio, you can't even hear the audio, right? You've been there, done that, or you know what I'm talking about. I know Outlaw Jelly Wells like other people know Rocky Horror Picture Show. And 1 hour and 28 minutes, unless you're getting one of the edited versions, someone came up to me and said, it's not 1 hour and 28, it's 1 hour and 31. All right, well, they edited a little bit more on the version you saw. It doesn't even matter, the story. Towards the end of the movie, Josie Wales rides into this ghost town, and he walks into this bar. It's not empty. He walks into this bar, and they get quiet, and they look at him, and they say, what'll it be, partner? And Josie Wales says, whiskey. And they laugh, chuckle, there's a little bantering back and forth. Partner, we ain't had whiskey in this town. We've been dried up for years. Might be a warm beer in the back. So Josie Wales leaves, and in that Hollywood fashion, you hear his spurs clinking as he gets closer. He kicks open the batwing doors, and he's got a case of whiskey in one hand and two bottles of whiskey in the other hand, and he's the man. They love him. He kills all the bad guys, gets the girl in the end. His former enemy respects him in the end of the movie, man. And I want to be just like Josie Wales. Unfortunately, in the real world, what you get is a suspended sentence for assault and battery, man. And that girl doesn't want nothing to do with you, right? She'll go with the non-drunk guy over there. You're not going to dance with me, you know, or John Wayne. You know, I tell you what, man, if John Wayne would have walked into the bar and said, pass the crack pipe, pilgrim, you'd have a different speaker. Because I'd have been smoking crack, man. But John Wayne didn't smoke crack. John Wayne drank whiskey. When I'm a tour, I don't remember my first drink. I don't know. I prayed. I asked God. I don't know. I honestly do not know. I absolutely do not know. What I know is some friends of my mom's, who, in the interest of time, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but remember, it doesn't matter. Friends of my mom's, when I would join the military at 17 and delayed entry program, I went in at 18, and I came home on leave that first Thanksgiving, went to the house we went to every year for Thanksgiving, and a bunch of the same persuasion of, you know, political view as my mother, and I'm in my military uniform, and they were teasing me and, you know, making fun of me and joking at me, and it wasn't getting to me. I just out of boot camp, I'm on fire, and then they said something that did, and what they said is, you look sharp in your uniform today, but you remember that time you were 5 years old, we gave you that hit of acid? You were tripping that day, man. And I was like, what? you guys gave me acid when I was 5 years old? I was angry, upset, and hurt about that for years. Years! Until I did the inventory on my mom. And a guy named Bob Earl. Some of you guys are long old enough to remember Bob. Bob was also the AA heretic. Like me in language, Bob went off the deep end on some other things. But Bob was my hero for a long time. And one of the things Bob said, and what I say now, is that my mom, thanks to inventory work, I figured out that my mom did the best she could with the tools she had. Thank you, Mom. I love you. Period. Move on, right? But still, nonetheless, I was eating acid at 5. You know, not that she was smoking pot. My wife was smoking pot. If we at 5, you know, if we would have met back then, we'd been married a lot longer than we have been. You know, it's like, man, you know, and it is not. It ain't that big a deal. I've been another person mentioned it. You know, when you talk a lot, you know, people have similar stories. And there, you know, there's a story about a kid down in L.A., I think it was in L.A., kindergarten, that's 5 years old, 5, 6. Kindergarten came home from school and told his mom he learned a new word from the big kids, and his mom said, you learned a new word. What word did you learn from the big kids? And he said, er. She said, er? How do you spell it? And he goes, I don't know, Mom. And she goes, well, what was the context? How did you learn it when the big kids taught it to you? And that's easy. He said, that's easy, Mom. They went like this. Oh, yeah. There's some potheads in here. I know you don't smoke anymore, but in our day, you used to smoke it, right? Now, I didn't like pot, man. I didn't like the munchies. I didn't like cotton mouth. I didn't like vegging out, you know. That didn't mean I didn't go, thanks, because I did, right? I don't want to be here. You know, I moved out on my own when I was 17 years old. I had enough money for booze and rent. And I'm not, you know, you smoke a little doobie, go to the refrigerator with the munchies, and what do you got? You know, ketchup packets from McDonald's, right? That's what you got. But you got the munchies and cotton mouth, right? So you eat it, right? Or Top Ramen. Always had Top Ramen. I don't understand. If you go to the store today, you can find Top Ramen for 10 cents a pack 50 years ago, it was 10 cents a pack. How come that gasoline can't be like that? Anything. Top Ramen is 10 on sale, you know. Or you might have some macaroni and cheese, right? You might have a little macaroni and cheese with the problem macaroni and cheese. You don't have any milk, you don't have any butter, right? But you got ketchup packets and the munchies, so you mix it all up. No. Speed, no, thank you. I don't like speed. I'm a neat freak as it is. My house is clean. I don't need speed to help me keep my house clean. And I do not enjoy the sensation of my eyes beating me into the next room. I don't like it. No thanks, right? I'm not buying. If you had some speed and you wanted to share with me, I'll take it, but no. Cocaine? No, thank you. I don't like the high on cocaine. I don't like the coming down on feeling that on cocaine. I don't like the expense of you know how many Jack Daniels I could buy with what you're paying? Again, if you want to share it with me, I'll snort it, but otherwise I'm not doing it, right? The acid, I loved acid, man. Acid was cheap, it was quick, it was easy. The problem with acid, I might have been reliving some childhood memories, I didn't even know it. The problem with acid is you can't take acid and convince even yourself that you're maintaining, right? Because you know. But as I mentioned, I joined the military at 17. I delayed entry program, and just after I turned 18, I went in the military. And I went in a thing called Special Forces. I went in the Army called Special Forces, right? Also known as what? The Green Berets. You can't answer. Green Berets, right? Why was I a Green Beret? Because John Wayne was a Green Beret. That's right. If John Wayne would have been a Navy SEAL, I'd have joined the Navy, man. But John Wayne was a Green Beret, so I was a Green Beret, you know? And I had someone come up in the meeting, after a meeting, my parents' generation, after a meeting one time, come up and talk to me and said, you know, John Wayne was a Marine before he was a Green Beret. I was like, I didn't see that movie, man. I saw the Green Beret, all right? And that's what I went in there, and it was a great place to start. That's how I got money to go to college. Remember, I'm a single kid, I'm a single mom on welfare using food stamps. I don't have money to go to school. The military was a great place to start, and it worked for me. I'm one of the guys where the system worked. Being raised on welfare and then joining the military, getting money for college, the system does work. I'm one of the guys it worked for, right? And I don't think it's the color of my skin. I think it's that sometimes the system can work. I understand. Well, I'm not going to go there. But anyways, it did work for me. And I went in the military, in Green Berets, and it was a great place to start. And I'll share real quick. What am I doing with time? As I mentioned, I'm the beach rat. Or I don't know if I mentioned that, actually. I grew up on the beach in San Diego. You guys know what the beach is out here? It's like the ocean, right? It's like there's water. You got that lake, Queen Lake, or Lake Queen or something up that way. I drove by it. So it's like that, only it's salty. Anyway, I'm a beach rat. I grew up on the beach, and I'm a rock and roll kind of guy, you know. Not the Beatles. If you're a Beatles freak, amen, namaste, whatever. But I don't know, lovely Rita, meet her maid. I want to hold your hand. Let it be. Now, I'm Rolling Stones, man. Songs like Bitch, you know, Rip This Joint, right? Or If You Can't Rock Me, Somebody Will, right? Yeah. Or Jethro Tull, Snot Running Down His Nose. I mean, that's some lyrics, baby, right there. But I got in the military, and I got turned on to this thing called country music. I'm like, who the hell listens to country music? Don't raise your hands. I was speaking in Bakersfield. Everybody raised their hand. Right? No, Hicks, man. Hicks listen to country music. But I got turned on to country music. And specifically two guys, one of whom you've heard of, Hank Williams Jr. Everybody knows Hank Jr. because of his dad. He's popular. He's a good singer. But another guy named David Allan Coe. Okay, yeah. Eric, was it? Scott. Scott knows David Allan. I was speaking in Oklahoma one time, mentioned David Allan Coe. They almost gave me a standing ovation. They just were so amazed. They love David Allan Coe. David Allan Coe is a little niche kind of singer. He was an outlaw. He was with Willie and Waylon and all those guys. He just wasn't that big. And if you go look him up. I'm not talking about his racist, sexist songs. You know, he's out there. But he also had some, he wrote Take This Job and Shove It. Johnny Paycheck made it a hit. He wrote the Joni Mitchell song Field of Diamonds, or Field of Stone. But anyways, regardless of all that, what he mostly sang about was pain, heartache, and betrayal. Right? I know it's like country music genre in general, but David Allan Coe had one like, I hate love, you know, more than anything else in life, I hate love. And love is a never-ending war. March me into action. I'm well trained for what's in store. You win some and you lose some. what I believe I'm in, and what I'm fighting for. And before Felina, you know, Felina mentioned how we met, and, you know, and yeah, she was new. She was a newcomer, you know, and I admit it. The Bob Earl, my hero, Bob. Bob said it best. I think the only people that don't get in relationships their first year are people who can't. That's it. The rest of it, you know, your sponsor says, don't get with that girl. It's like, bam, he's right there. Don't do it. Don't do it. You know, and when we, when that part of our, but see, Felina and I believe we're meant to be together. Like she said, it's taken us 20 years. I share, we've been together 20 years, 23 now, but we've been together 23 years. We just had been with other people in the interim. But my wife could, people could feel the energy in the room when Felina and I were at a meeting together. After we'd broken apart, when we were in the room together, you could feel it. I could feel it. So anyways, now I've forgotten. I was going off on, I got all excited. newcomers. You know, and it worked for a minute. You know, it worked for then, and it's better, even better now. But I tell you what, it's still, but we had a speaker one time from Canada. I don't remember her name, but she came into Alcoholics Anonymous, 80 pounds, and drugged out, and, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And now you wouldn't even recognize her. She's beautiful. And she talked, and she said it best. In the book, it says, we are not the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. And I went, wow, you know, that's right. I'm not suggesting anything, but I'm also saying I'm not the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. My job is to help a guy stay sober. I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous to get rich sober, I mean, to get rich and famous and fat and comfortable, none of that stuff. I don't believe that's why God had me get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe God had me get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous to help somebody, to help others, to help you, to help the guys in the room, ladies too, if I'm available to help, you know, but usually I'll hand them off, right, that kind of thing. And it's not just here in Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, I got a flag on one side and my rotary pin on the other side. And Rotary, I've been in Rotary 20, 21 years, 22 years. It talks about in the big book. Get involved with things outside of alcoholism. And Rotary's motto is service, service, service. Service above self. My very first Rotary, meeting of Rotary, one of the guys announced, hey, we're going to go feed the homeless. Can anybody help? And nobody raised their hand. I said to the guy that brought me, can I do it as a guest? And he said, sure. So my very first meeting of Rotary, I joined, I rose my hand and went down and helped feed the homeless. And then I took it over. It became my commitment. And on and on and on and on and on. So getting involved in other things because of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Like she said, I say it all the time. Almost every time I share, I say Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with my entire heart and soul because of the man I have become and helping others. So it's not, and it's easy in here, man. You go, it's easy to go pour coffee in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's easy. It's easy to pour coffee because everybody's like, me being a service. It's easy to put away the chairs in Alcoholics. It's easy. Everybody knows what you're doing. Do it out there. My Rotary Club, perfect example. I learned in here, like, that's why we admire you guys so much. I learned in here, my commitment, my home group, and all the meetings in my home group that I go to every week, I say hi to everybody in the room. And I'll say, hey, welcome, you're new or you're visiting, because I don't recognize, what's your name? Dylan? So Dylan comes in, I don't recognize Dylan. Now I used to say, hey, welcome, you new? And then I know I got 25 years. So I changed it to, hey, you new, you're visiting, to make sure it doesn't offend anybody, right? But I go around and say hi to everybody in the room in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do that at my Rotary Club, and they don't do it anymore. But in the beginning, they say, what, are you running for office? I'm like, you know, I won't say what I said. You know, if it was not for Alcoholics Anonymous, there are people in my Rotary Club I would have beat up. I would have pulled them across the table like you see in the movie and bit them, bam, bam, and put them back, right? Just like in the cartoons. But if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, no one would have ever invited me to be involved in Rotary. I'm also involved in my church. I love my church. I'm the head greeter, right? I do the greeting schedule. Where I learn that? In here, right? I'm involved in that church. It's just like it says in the big book. You might be the only bright, and I'm not the only bright, but I'm a bright spot for that preacher. When he needs something, or they, I got an email from the secretary the other day that they need some help. Hey, can you put a few guys together and come help us out? So we'll see. Probably can do that. So helping out anywhere I can, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, is what I learned. But I am not a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I go to that church. I am not a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I go to that Rotary Club. I guarantee you, though, I'm a better Rotarian and I'm a better church member because I'm here with you. Because I made that drive. Yeah, it's a long drive, you know? So what? It's a long drive. I got to spend 3 hours with my wife in the car. You know what? And I get to spend 3 hours with her in the back on the drive back. Just me and her. We got kids back. Emil's got kids back. Yeah, my son is back for a week, 3 weeks ago. And and her, and it's fine, it's family, right? It's not, but it's, anyway, so 3 hours back. You know. Where am I going to go? How much? I don't know. Service. I'm on family. Let me talk about family a little bit. My daughter Jessica, who's now 37. But Jessica, when she was growing up, and Mark probably met her, but she, I used to work in a prison in Lompoc. Convict in the back going, damn, I thought he looked familiar. But I used to work out in Lompoc, and I was listening to Bob Earl. I was listening to Bob Earl talk on a tape, cassette tape. Now, I know some of you don't even know what those are, but these little cassette tape things. And Bob was talking about going to the Lompoc Penitentiary 25 years ago when the AA sponsor was a Catholic priest practicing alcoholic. I thought, I wonder if he'd want to go in again. Long story, I got a hold of him, scheduled him to come in, and he was scheduled to come in October 95, and we had a riot in the prison and got locked down the week before. Called him up and said, hey, we're locked down, you can't come. When's the next Saturday you got? And he said when it was. Long story short, that I don't have time to say, but in the interim, a speaker meeting on the street, a local speaker meeting, kind of, I think that's what you guys normally are, right? Or do you, you know, you're close enough to LA, you can bring people up, but it was a local speaker meeting, just had local people speaking. And in November 95, the secretary said, this is the last meeting in this group, the church is kicking us out and I can't find a place. Newcomer in the back of the room, never saw him again, but he said, hey, how hard can it be to find a place? I'll find a place. And in the end, I found a place. There was a Catholic priest going to my home group. I asked him, can we meet at your church? Called the secretary. He said, hey, I said, hey, we got a place. And he said, dude, as far as I'm concerned, that meeting is closed. If you want it, you can have it. Hung up. I went, okay, wait a minute. I got this guy, Bob Earl, coming up to come into prison during the day that day. Maybe he'll talk that night. And he would. He did. So a meeting that had 20 in November of 95 had 300 in December of 95. And we kept doing it ever since. They used to come up and go into prison when I worked there, come in during the day. And then that night they'd speak out on the street, you know, and it was a good deal, a good gig, you know. And my daughter, that meeting grew and it was 300, 400 people. It was a big meeting. And, you know, the convicts used to have a joke. They'd say, commit a crime, go to prison, have circuit speakers come visit you. but, you know, my daughter had commitments at that meeting. And one night, she used to count the seven tradition and sell the cassette tapes. Again, that was back when we had cassette tapes. She was 10, 11 years old, 9, 8, 9, 11. And 1 month she got invited to go on an overnight slumber party with a bunch of other little 10-year-old girls. And she asked me, like, Dad, what should I do? And I said, Jessica, go. It's all right, man. We'll take care of it. You go be with your girlfriends. It's okay. And she said, but, Dad, I have a commitment. I asked her to sponsor me, man. I was like, I had guys that don't go to that meeting because of a girl, right? Some girl that maybe she might like me. And so I'm going to go, you know. I'm here with my daughter. She came. She counted the seven trees and sold the cassette tape. We dropped her off, and they stayed up all night anyways, right? Same daughter. Once she was going to college down in San Diego. No, she was working in San Diego. She's in the radio. She's a radio DJ. She has a 7 to 10 a.m. or 6 to 10 a.m. show in Santa Maria. It's like the big thing. Anyway, but she was in San Diego, got on a train to come up to Santa Maria to visit home, and across the way from her was a young lady with a blue book. Didn't have the cover on it, just a blue book, right? Just so she was incognito, just like that. And Jessica, and I don't know if you know how trains sit, but they have seats facing each other. So Jessica saw the blue book, and she said, rarely have we seen a person fail. And the young lady across from her said, oh, my God, are you a friend of Bill? And my daughter said, no, I'm a friend of Lee. My dad is an AA. And then she's talked with that young. Jessica's not an alcoholic. She's crazy. She can have half a glass of wine and set it down and leave it. But, you know, it's okay, whatever. But she talked to that young lady all the 4 or 5 hours on the train, and that's the experience I had. And then, you know, there's, you know, that's what made me think of this, is driving. So I used to take those. It's easy. Like I said, oh, my God, it fits perfect. Oh, God is good. It fits perfect from what I said earlier without even planning it. Is people will say, hey, next time you talk, let me come with you. I'm like, sure. Right. And then it comes. Hey, I'm going to Lancaster. Oh, dude, there's something else I got to do because it's a long drive. When you're thinking about doing it, it's fun. So anyway, my point is, a lot of times people would say they wanted to come next time I go talk somewhere, but they didn't want to come when the time came. So I started taking my kids, and like I had 3 hours with Felina today on the drive down. I used to have one-on-one time. She has 5, I have 4, so we have 9 together now. And they're all adults. But so I'd bring them with me to go talk, and they got to know their dad. And I'll never forget one time Palm Springs. That's a long drive. And my 16-year-old came, my oldest, she's 40-something now, but Julianne came with me to Palm Springs, man. 16-year-old daughters don't hang out with their dads. But you know when they do? When their dad learns how to be a dad in Alcoholics Anonymous from men like Keith Carpenter. That's how 16-year-old daughters hang out with their dad. And I'll never forget, never, as long as I live. I get more, but she, when I got introduced the way that I did to Joanne, right, Joni? Robin, you think I'm better with names. Robin did tonight. I got up to go talk, and Julianne kissed me on the cheek and said, "Good luck, Dad." 16-year-old daughter. I'll never forget that, you know. And I got up and talked, whatever, you know. So my kids came with me to do that. And I remember one time, I have time to tell the story. There was H&I. Anybody do H&I work? Good. A lot of y'all do H&I work. So through H&I, there's some convicts on death row that got sober. On death row, because people like you that raise your hands went into the prisons and took the message to those guys. And then one time the warden noticed it, called the guys called one of the guys to his office and said, "Hey, I noticed you turned your life around since you just AA thing, since you got sober. I'd like to do something before your day comes. You know, your date. What can I do for you?" And the first convict said, "Warden, if I can carry the message to any other inmate on this compound, any of the other cell blocks, anywhere before my time, I'd really appreciate it." Warden said, "I'll see what I can do." Called the second convict to his office and said the same thing. The second convict said, "Execute me, Warden, immediately. If I got to hear his story one more time." It's funny, but why? I used to tell that joke a lot. And one day, I was talking in Goleta, which is 45 minutes from my house, a Sunday. And it's actually going on right now, same time as this meeting. But anyways, I was taking a sponsee, and he canceled at the last minute. So I went to my son, Jeremiah, my youngest, and he was playing on Nintendo. That's how long ago it was. It was a Nintendo game. He was playing on his Nintendo. I said, "Hey, Maya, I'm talking in Goleta. You want to come?" He didn't even look up. He said, "Convicts, Dad. I'm the second one." So, you know, they quit coming, and I'm getting close. I got to be close. So, look, I'll tell you what. As I said, Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me. I love it. It's my entire. And I hope I can share some of that with you tonight, and you got some of it. And if you don't get it, if you think I'm insane, you don't. Loco. If you think I'm crazy, how about crazy? How's that? Keep coming back. And you'll get it. Thanks a lot.